Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven. Stay driven.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Bareback Facts Season 2, History Written in Blood. I am your host, your guide, and a renowned speaker to the dead. And I will be bringing you a story, a tale. No. Even more than that, I will be teaching you a lesson. Today, we're going to discuss the life, style, and crimes of the Mad Emperor Caligula, the first known emperor of Rome to have been assassinated. Now, he's best known as Caligula, but in order to get a better understanding of our subject today, we'll need to get to know the man a little bit better than his notorious moniker. So, without further ado, dim the lights, step on in, and let's get acquainted with the dead, shall we? So, for those of you unfamiliar with Caligula, this is only a nickname for a man known more aptly as Gaius Caesar Germanicus. Now, Gaius Caesar Germanicus succeeded the Emperor Tiberius as Roman Emperor in the year 37 AD, but his story begins much, much earlier. Gaius was born on August 31st in the year 12 AD, and he earned the nickname Caligula, or Little Boot, because of his father, a man in the Germanic territories. Now, as a child, he acquired the nickname, meaning little soldier's boot, the diminutive form of the word caliga, from his father's soldiers, and this was during their campaign in Germania. Now, his father, Germanicus, died at Antioch in the year 19 AD. His mother, Agrippina, would return with her six children to Rome, where she became entangled in a bitter feud with the emperor Tiberius. 2 years after Caligula's birth, Germanicus's uncle and adoptive father succeeded Augustus as emperor of Rome in the year AD 14, and thus a family feud would begin. Now, the conflict led eventually to the destruction of her family, with Caligula as the sole male survivor. Tiberius became concerned that with the return of Agrippina, that he would have rival claimants for his throne. Now, before we proceed any further into the blood-soaked life of this man, I would like to remind you all that we have a call-in number, and that call-in number is 718-508-9883. So should you find yourself to be uncomfortable with the telling of this tale, should you have questions, or should you find yourself so fascinated that you'd like to converse with me directly, do feel free to chime in at any time. Now then, we follow Caligula and his mother, Agrippina, in this feud, and Caligula becomes the sole male survivor of his branch of the family. He accepts an invitation in the year 31 AD to join the emperor on the island of Capri, where Tiberius had withdrawn 5 years earlier, having been untouched by the deadly intrigues that had plagued his family. Now, following the death of Tiberius, Caligula would succeed his adoptive grandfather as emperor in the year 37 AD. marking the beginning of what would be one of the shortest reigns in Roman history. Now, there are scant surviving sources about the reign of Caligula, although he is described as a noble and moderate emperor during the first 6 months of his rule. After this period, the sources focus upon his cruelty, sadism, extravagance, and sexual perversions, presenting him as an insane tyrant who cannot be pleased nor satisfied by anyone around him. Now, while the reliability of these sources remains questionable amongst historians, it is known that during his brief reign, Caligula worked to increase the unconstrained personal power of the emperor, as opposed to countervailing powers within the principate. He directed much of his attention to ambitious construction projects and luxurious dwellings for himself, and initiated the construction of two aqueducts in Rome, the Aqua Claudia and the Anio Novus. Now, during his reign, the empire would annex the kingdom of Mauritania as a province, and in early AD 41, things would change. But before we get to these changes, let us first get more acquainted with his family. Now, he was born Gaius Julius Caesar, named in honor of his famous relative, as well he might be, who would not want to be named after Julius. He was born in Antium, modern Anzio and Nettuno, 12 AD, and he was the third of six surviving children born to Germanicus and his second cousin, Agrippina the Elder. Now, it should come as no surprise that the royal family had been marrying cousins. It was believed during this time period that royal blood must be sustained by any means necessary. Gaius had two older brothers, one named Nero and one named Drusus, as well as three younger sisters, Agrippina the Younger, Julia Drusilla, and Julia Lavilla. He was also a nephew of Claudius and Germanicus's younger brother, as well as future emperor. Now, Agrippina the Elder was the daughter of Marcus Vipsanius Agrippa and Julia the Elder. She was a granddaughter of Augustus and Scribonia on her mother's side. And through Agrippina, Augustus was the maternal great-grandfather of Gaius. Now, as a boy of just two or three, Gaius would accompany his father, Germanicus, on campaigns in the north of Germania. The soldiers in his unit, his father's unit, were amused that Gaius was dressed in a miniature soldier's outfit, including both boots and armor, and he was soon given his nickname Caligula, meaning little soldier's boot in Latin, after the small boots that were fashioned for him to wear. Gaius, though, reportedly grew to dislike this nickname. One writer, historian Suetonius, claims that Germanicus was poisoned in Syria by an agent of Tiberius who viewed Germanicus as his political rival. Now, after the death of his father, Caligula would live with his mother until her relations with Tiberius completely deteriorated. Tiberius would not allow Agrippina to remarry for fear that her husband would be a rival to his reign. Agrippina and Caligula's brother Nero were banished in the year 29 AD on charges of sedition and treason. The adolescent Caligula was then sent to live with his great-grandfather and Tiberius's mother, Livia. After her death, he was sent to live with his grandmother, Antonia. And in the year 30 AD, his brother Drusus Caesar was imprisoned on charges of treason, and his brother Nero died in exile from either starvation or suicide, the results of his death, and the consequences leading up to his death are still shrouded in somewhat mysterious circumstances. It's still not quite known as to whether or not he died from starvation or whether or not he decided to kill himself. Nonetheless, one of our sources, Suetonius, writes that after the banishment of his mother and brothers, Caligula and his sisters were nothing more than the prisoners of Tiberius under the close watch of soldiers. And it was in the year 31 AD that Caligula was remanded to the personal care of Tiberius on Capri, where he lived for 6 years. To the surprise of many, Caligula was spared by him. And according to historians, Caligula was an excellent natural actor, and recognizing danger hid all his resentment towards Tiberius. An observer said of Caligula that never was there a better servant or a worse master. Now, Caligula himself claimed to have dagger in order to avenge his mother and brother. However, having brought the weapon into Tiberius's bedroom, he did not kill the emperor, but instead threw the dagger down on the floor. Supposedly, Tiberius knew of this, but never dared to do anything about it. Tertullus claims that Caligula was already cruel and vicious, and writes that when Tiberius brought Caligula to Capri, his purpose was to allow Caligula to live in order that he prove the ruin of himself and of all men, and that he was rearing a viper for the Roman people and a phaeton for the world. Now, before we proceed to the period of time in which Caligula is granted the power of emperor, I think now would be an apt time for a brief commercial break. So before we journey into the realm of Caligula's very short and very disturbing reign, I think it's important that I announce to you all, we do have a new sponsor here at Total Driven Entertainment. He's wacky, he's funny, and he's crazy. Do check out ChrisFraleyPresents.com for some content that will no doubt bring a smile to your face, unlike the content I'm sharing with you today. I will see you all after the break, where we will pick up the tale of Caligula's young foray, into the realm of leadership.
I'm Black Man, saving man's eyes, one stereotype at a time.
To the Black Mobile. To the corner of Martin Luther King Street and Malcolm X Boulevard, pronto.
Will Black Man make it to the crime on time? Or will he be on CPT? Stay tuned at ChrisFraleyPresents.com.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin on the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in Southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Welcome back to the Bareback Facts. I do hope you all enjoyed that cheerful four-way into a more optimistic area of discussion. But we now will return to the world of Caligula. Now, when I left you all, Caligula had been left in the care of Tiberius, the man responsible for the demise of much of his family and the horrible plight of his mother. Now, in the year 33 AD, Tiberius would give Caligula an honorary quaestorship, a position that he held until his rise to emperor. This position was an honorary position of power in the empire. Now, meanwhile, both Caligula's mother and his brother, Drusus, would Caligula then was briefly married to Junia Claudilia in 33, although she then died in childbirth the following year. Now, Caligula spent time befriending the Praetorian prefect Naevius Sutorius Macro, who would later become an important ally. Macro spoke well of Caligula to Tiberius, attempting to quell any ill will or suspicion that the emperor felt towards Caligula. And in the year AD 35, Caligula was named joint heir to Tiberius' estate, along with Tiberius Camellius. Now, when Tiberius died on the day of March 16th in the year 37 AD, his estate and the titles of the principate were left to Caligula and Tiberius' own grandson, Camellius, who were to serve as joint heirs. Although Tiberius was 77 and on his deathbed, some historians still conjecture that he was murdered. Tacitus writes that the Praetorian prefect Macro may have indeed smothered Tiberius with a pillow to hasten Caligula's accession, much to the joy of the Roman people. While Suetonius writes that Caligula may have carried out the killing himself, though this is not recorded by any other ancient historian. Seneca the Elder and Philo, both who wrote during Tiberius' reign, as well as Josephus, record Tiberius as dying a natural death. Backed by Macro and Caligula as well, Caligula had Tiberius' will nullified with the regard to Camellus on grounds of insanity, but otherwise carried out Tiberius' wishes. Now, Caligula accepted the powers of the principate as conferred by the Senate and entered Rome on the march amid a crowd that hailed him as our baby and our star, amongst other nicknames. Caligula is described as the first emperor who was admired by everyone in all the world, from the rising to the setting sun. Caligula was loved by many for being the beloved son of the popular Germanicus, and because he was not Tiberius, who had been quite cruel during his reign. Paranoid always that someone would take his power, Tiberius was known for imprisoning people on a whim, as he had done to Caligula's own family. Suetonius said that over 160,000 animals had been sacrificed during the 3 months of public rejoicing to usher in the new reign of Caligula. And Philo describes the first 7 months of Caligula's reign as complete bliss for the people of Rome. Caligula's first acts were said to have been generous in spirit, though many became political in nature. To gain support, he granted bonuses to the military, including the Praetorian Guard, city troops, and the army outside Italy. He destroyed Tiberius's treason papers, declared that treason trials were a thing of the past and recalled those who had been sent into exile. He helped those who had been harmed by the imperial tax system banish certain sexual deviants and put on lavish spectacles for the public, including gladiatorial games. Caligula himself collected and brought back the bones of his mother and of his brothers and deposited their remains in the tomb of Augustus. In October of 37 AD, Caligula would fall seriously ill, or perhaps might have even been poisoned. However, he soon recovered from his illness, but many believed that the illness turned the young emperor towards the diabolical. He started to kill off or exile those who were close to him or whom he saw as a serious threat. Perhaps his illness reminded him of his mortality and of the desire of others to advance into his place. He had a cousin and adopted son, Tiberius Gemellus, executed, an act that outraged Caligula's and Gemellus' mutual grandmother, Antonia Minor. She is said to have committed suicide, although Suetonius hints that Caligula actually poisoned her. He had his father-in-law, Marcus Junius Solanus, and his brother-in-law, Marcus Lepidus, executed as well. His uncle Claudius was spared only because Caligula preferred to keep him as a laughingstock. He enjoyed mocking him in front of the public and in front of his other family members. It brought him great amusement. His favorite sister, Julia Drusilla, died in 38 AD of a fever, and his other two sisters, Livilla and Agrippina the Younger, were later exiled. He hated being the grandson of Agrippa and slandered Augustus by repeating a falsehood that his mother was actually conceived as the result of an incestuous relationship between Augustus and his daughter Julia the Elder. In the year 38 AD, Caligula focused his attention on political and public reform. He published the accounts of public funds, which had not been made public during the reign of Tiberius, and aided those who lost property in fires, abolished certain taxes, and gave out prizes to the public at gymnastic events. He allowed new members into the equestrian and senatorial orders, but perhaps most significantly, he restored the practice of democratic elections. Cassius Dio said that this act, though delighting the rabble, grieved the sensible, who stopped to reflect that if the offices should fall once more to the hands of the many, many disasters should result. During the same year, however, Caligula was criticized for executing people without giving them full trials and for forcing his supporter Macro to commit suicide to please him. Now, according to Cassius Dio, a financial crisis would emerge in 39 AD. Suetonius places the beginning of this crisis, however, in the year 38 AD. Caligula's political payments for support, generosity, and extravagance had exhausted the state's treasury. Ancient historians state that Caligula began falsely accusing, fining, and even killing individuals for the purpose of seizing their estates to replenish the royal coffers. Historians describe a number of Caligula's other desperate measures. In order to gain funds, Caligula asked the public to lend the state money. He levied taxes on lawsuits, weddings, and prostitution, and began auctioning the lives of the gladiators at shows. Wills that left items to Tiberius were reinterpreted to leave the items instead to Caligula, and centurions who had acquired property by plunder were forced now to turn over the spoils to the state. The current and past highway commissioners were accused of incompetence and embezzlement and forced to repay money. According to Suetonius, in the first year of Caligula's reign, he squandered approximately 2.7 sesterces that Tiberius had amassed. And by that, I stand corrected, 2.7 billion sesterces that Tiberius had amassed, a vast sum of wealth. His nephew Nero Caesar both envied and admired the fact that Gaius had run through the vast wealth Tiberius had left him in so short a time. However, some historians have shown skepticism toward a large amount of skepticism towards the number of sesterces quoted by Suetonius and Dio. According to Suetonius, Caligula's use of precious metals to mint coins throughout his principate indicates that the treasury most likely never fell into bankruptcy. And this is according to the writings of one historian, Sam Wilkinson. Now, he does point out, however, that it is difficult to ascertain whether the purported squandered wealth was from the Treasury or due to the blurring of the division between the private wealth of the emperor and his income as head of state. Furthermore, another historian by the name of Richard Alston, who also quotes Tacitus in his accounts, points out that Caligula's successor, Claudius, was able to donate some 15,000 sesterces to each member of the Praetorian Guard in the year 41 AD, indicative of solvency within the Roman treasury. A brief famine of unknown extent occurred, perhaps caused by this financial crisis, but Suetonius claims it resulted from Caligula's seizure of public carriages. According to Seneca, grain imports were disturbed because Caligula repurposed grain boats for a pontoon bridge. Now, this is another matter that is of hefty debate, but nonetheless, we can see that in the first few months alone, if we backtrack here just a little bit, I know we covered quite a bit here. We're going to continue forward in a moment, but I think it's important that we backtrack momentarily. We can see that at the beginning, Caligula is welcomed with open arms. Tiberius was seen as not only a tyrant during his time as emperor, but he was seen as particularly cruel and paranoid all the time that somebody was going to steal his power. And it's not until this near-death experience of Caligula's, in which he fell dangerously ill in October of the year, first year of his reign, that Caligula seems, it's not until October of the first year of his reign that Caligula falls ill as a result of either simply contracting an illness or getting poisoned and surviving the ordeal, that we see a change in Caligula. Now, at least a noticeable change in the way that he's treating people. And we can see from here at the beginning that his actions are a bit erratic. He gravitates from gifts of extravagance and charity to the people to cruel and harsh punishments to anyone and everyone that it somehow manages to incur his wrath for even the smallest slights. So he goes from giving people money and pleasing the crowds with gladiatorial bouts and donating money to projects and buildings to we're going to repossess your stuff, I'm going to kill people, I'm going to imprison people. So we can see that even in the early goings of his reign, things are not looking too good. And then we see that in the second year of his reign, we see that Caligula has run into some financial trouble for all the gift-giving, all the things that he was doing. Things that he was doing to try and show off his opulence, show off his grandeur, began to come back and bite him in the rear. So this made him even more paranoid that somebody was going to take his power. So if we see at the beginning, he starts to act a lot more like Tiberius in the very moment where he senses his own mortality and senses that other people can smell blood in the water. They sense his weakness. And it's because of this that we can see Caligula changes his tactics. He changes the way that he begins treating the masses, changes the way that he treats those around him. Clearly, the political move that he makes in restoring democratic elections is not to give the people a say in government. It's not to encourage the little people and give them a voice in government. No, it's to undermine the power of landholders and senators in the Senate. It's to take away the power of those people who are in administrative positions so that those people can be voted out, so that Caligula can maintain grip on his own office, his own seat of power. Notice that he doesn't just make it possible for a new emperor to be elected. That would be too generous. No, it's only the administrative positions, only public offices held by people lower than him are up for grabs. So you can see he begins to undermine the people around him because he feels threatened following his near-death experience. He comes to the realization that what happened to Tiberius could certainly happen to him, and he didn't want that to happen. So to grow a little bit more paranoid with the passing of each year. Now, despite the financial difficulties that Caligula encountered, he embarked on a number of construction projects during his reign. Some were for the public good, though others were for himself. Josephus describes Caligula's movements, improvements to the harbors at Rhegium and Sicily, allowing increased grain imports from Egypt, as his greatest contributions to the people of the Roman Empire. These improvements, though, may have been in response to the famine that had been taking place at this time. Now, Caligula completed the Temple of Augustus and the Theater of Pompeii and began an amphitheater beside the Septa. He expanded the imperial palace. He began the aqueducts Aqua Claudia and Anio Novus, which Pliny the Elder considered engineering marvels. He built a large racetrack known as the Circus of Gaius and Nero and had an Egyptian obelisk, now known as the Vatican obelisk, transported by sea and erected in the middle of Rome. At Syracuse, he repaired the city walls and the Temple of the Gods. He had new roads built and pushed to keep roads in good condition. He had planned to rebuild the Palace of Polycrates at Samos, to finish the Temple of Didymaean Apollo at Ephesus, and to found a high city up in the Alps. He planned to dig a canal through the Isthmus of Corinth in Greece and sent a chief centurion to survey the work. In 39 AD, Caligula performed a spectacular stunt by supposedly ordering a temporary floating bridge to be built using ships as pontoons, stretching for over 2 miles from the resort of Baiae to the neighboring port of Puteoli. And this is said, it was said that this bridge was to rival the Persian king Xerxes' pontoon bridge crossing of the Hellespont. Now, Caligula, who could not swim, then proceeded to ride his favorite horse, Incitatus, across wearing the breastplate of Alexander the Great. This was in of a prediction by Tiberius' soothsayer, Thrasyllus of Mendes, that Caligula had no more chance of becoming emperor than of riding a horse across the Bay of Baiae. And this is, of course, a matter of speculation. This is something that people said of him. It's one of the many stories that follow Caligula around. But we still are not sure today if he truly did have this pontoon bridge constructed. It could just be one of the many outrageous rumors that certainly followed Caligula around until his death and following him well afterward. Now, Caligula had 2 ships constructed for himself, which were recovered from the bottom of Lake Nemi around 1930. The ships were among the largest vessels in the ancient world. The smaller ship was designed as a temple dedicated to Diana. The larger was essentially an elaborate floating palace with marble floors and plumbing. 13 years after being raised, the ships were burned during an attack in the Second World War, and almost nothing remains of their hulls, though many archaeological treasures remain intact in the museum at Lake Nemi and in the Museo Nazionale Romano, the Palazzo Massimo at Rome. Now, in the year 39 AD, despite all the awesome feats of construction and the tremendous amounts of money that Caligula is spending while he's in debt, relations with Caligula and the Roman Senate suddenly deteriorate. Surprise, surprise, when you're spending money you don't have and you're taking power away from the guys who have already had power for a very long time, and you're now saying that their positions are now up for grabs, that people can vote them in and out of office, suddenly your relationship with them deteriorates. That's right. When you tell people you're changing the rules, it pisses them off. And that's exactly what happens when Caligula informs the Senate that, guess what, guys, things are going to change. Now, the subject of their disagreement is unknown, though a number of factors, though, aggravated this feud between the two parties. The Senate had become accustomed to ruling without an emperor between the departure of Tiberius for Cabrae in 26 AD and Caligula's accession. Additionally, Tiberius's treason trials had eliminated a number of pro-Julian senators, such as Asinius Gallus.
Caligula reviewed Tiberius's records of treason trials and decided, based on their actions during these trials, that numerous senators were not trustworthy. He ordered a new set of investigations and trials and replaced the consul and several senators he put to death. Now, Suetonius reports that other senators were degraded by being forced to wait on him and run beside him in his chariot. Soon after his break with the Senate, Caligula faced a number of additional conspiracies against him. A conspiracy involving his brother-in-law was foiled later in the same year. And soon afterwards, the governor of Germany, Gnaeus Cornelius Lentulus Gaetulicus, yeah, that's a mouthful, guys, was executed for connections to a conspiracy involving the emperor. Now, many historians will tell you that the feud between Caligula and the Senate is unknown. We're not exactly sure when things truly broke down, but one can assume that when Caligula began spending these exorbitant amounts of money, and he had already had this basic distrust of them since they'd been a part of Tiberius's rule, but not only that, not only the exorbitant amounts of money that he really couldn't afford to spend that he was spending, but the fact that he wanted to reinstitute democratic elections for the senator positions, positions that could in fact be inherited, and positions that were very hard to get to begin with, this is most likely the reason why he and the Senate found themselves at odds. It's really not that big of a mystery. Now, in the year 40 AD, Caligula expanded the Roman Empire into Mauritania and made a significant attempt at expanding into Britannia, even challenging Neptune in his campaign. Yes, that's right. He's challenging a god. The conquest of Britannia was fully realized by his successors, although he would not survive to see it happen. Now, Mauritania was a client kingdom of Rome, ruled by the Ptolemy of Mauritania, and it's basically right near the Strait of Gibraltar. It's in northern Africa. Now, it was annexed by Caligula following his invitation to Ptolemy to Rome, whereupon Ptolemy arrives and is suddenly captured and executed by Caligula, who just decides, hey, welcome to the town, come on in, and now we're going to cut your head off. Now, Mauritania was later annexed by Caligula and subsequently divided into two provinces and separated by the river Malua. Now, one writer, Cassiustino Udio, claims that division was the work of Caligula, Pliny the Elder states that the division was the work of Caligula, but Cassiustino states that in the year 42 AD, an uprising took place which was subdued by Gaius Suetonius Paulinus and Gnaeus Hosidius Geta, and the division only took place after this. This confusion might mean that Caligula decided to divide the province, but the division was postponed because of the rebellion. Now, the first known equestrian governor of the two provinces was Marcus Fabius Caelar Flavianus, in office in the year 44 AD. Now, in addition to his attempts and ambitions towards Britannia, things didn't really come together. They don't really make it across the English Channel during the time in which he was alive. There was a campaign that they attempted that was aborted. The campaign is derided by ancient historians with accounts of Gauls dressed up as Germanic tribesmen and Roman troops ordered to collect seashells as wars of war. But nonetheless, Gaius doesn't have much success. Caligula, our dear emperor here, doesn't manage to conquer the island of Britannia. Now, when several client kings came to pay Rome their respects, and of course to pay their homage and tribute to the emperor, and argued about their nobility of descent, it is alleged that Caligula cried out the Homeric line, "Let there be one lord, one king." Now, in the year 40 AD, Caligula began implementing very controversial policies that introduced religion into his political role. He began appearing in public dressed as various gods and demigods, such as Hercules, Mercury, Venus, and Apollo, and reportedly he began referring to himself as a god when meeting with politicians and was referred to as Jupiter on occasion in public documents. He was set apart for his worship at Miletus in the province of Asia, and two temples were erected for worship of him in Rome. The temple of Castor and Pollux on the Forum was linked directly to the imperial residence on the Palatine and dedicated to Caligula. And he would appear here on occasion and present himself as a god to the public. Caligula had the heads removed from various statues of gods and replaced with his own in some temples. And it said that he wished to be worshipped as Neos Helios, the new sun. Indeed, he was represented as a sun god on Egyptian coins. Caligula's religious policy was a departure from that of his predecessors. According to Cassius Dio, living emperors could be worshipped as divine in the East, and dead emperors could be worshipped as divine in Rome. Augusta, his spirit on occasion, but Dio describes this as an extreme act that emperors generally shied away from. Caligula took things a step further and had those in Rome, including senators, worship him as a tangible living god. So, as if Caligula couldn't go off the rails any more than he already had, he'd killed a lot of people, he'd spent a lot of money he couldn't afford to spend, and become increasingly unpopular with the people around him. These things weren't enough. Now, he had to get people around him to look at him and basically perform on him, perform for him daily the ablutions that he was a god. That's right. They had to every day inform him that he was God. So this guy took one hell of a power trip. Now, Caligula led military campaigns in the year 39 AD and 40 AD to the Rhine and the English Channel, where he eschewed battles for theatrical displays, commanded his troops to plunder the sea by gathering shells in their helmets. His relationships with other individuals during this time were turbulent as well, and his biographer Suetonius quotes his oft-repeated phrase quite frequently, "Remember that I have the right to do anything to anybody." He tormented high-ranking senators by making them run for miles in front of his chariot. He had brazen affairs with the wives of his allies and was rumored to have even had incestuous relationships with his sisters, though this has never truly been substantiated. Caligula himself was tall, pale, and so hairy that he made it a capital offense to mention a goat in his presence. He worked to accentuate his natural ugliness by practicing terrifying facial expressions in a mirror, but he literally wallowed in luxury, allegedly rolling around in piles of money, drinking precious pearls dissolved in vinegar. He continued to his childhood games of dress-up, donning strange clothing, women's shoes, and lavish accessories, as well as wigs, eager, according to his other biographer, Cassius Dio, to appear to be anything rather than a human being and an emperor. So here we have Caligula going off the freaking reservation. He's having sex with anything that moves, even if it's married. He's killing people because he can. He's building things left and right, and if those things that he couldn't afford to build, he's going to war, but not really, because he's not really fighting anybody. He's just claiming to. And really, things are just going off the reservation for him. Now, Caligula's profligacy was draining the Roman treasury faster than he could replenish it through taxes and extortion. We mentioned the many ways in which he attempted to replenish this fund. To do so would result in a real conspiracy, not one of the ones that he had fabricated in his mind, but an actual conspiracy that would ultimately lead to his downfall. But before we get to those guilty members who brought down mighty Caligula, I think we're going to take one more commercial break, everybody. We've covered a lot of information. We've gotten into a lot of stuff, looking at a lot of biography, and it's good stuff. But before we get to the bare bones of Caligula's fate, we're going to take one more commercial break, guys. And as always, I would like to remind you that here at Totally Driven, we have a proud new sponsor. He's wacky, he's crazy, and he's incredibly funny. Check out ChrisFraleyPresents.com for more cheerful material. And, of course, lighter pastures, greener pastures, right? So I'll see you all after the commercial break, where we will discuss the conspiracy that eventually claims Caligula's life.
Five black men saving man's eyes, one stereotype at a time.
To the Blackmobile. To the corner of Martin Luther King Street and Malcolm X Boulevard. Pronto.
Will black man make it to the crime on time? Or will he be on CPT? Stay tuned at ChrisFraleyPresents.com.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word about your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin on the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in Southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Bareback Facts, History, and Blood. This is our second season. Of course, before we left the commercial break, for those of you who were here, for those of you just joining us, we've been talking about Caligula. But before we left the commercial break, we talked about all the erratic behaviors of Caligula. Yes, he did some good, but at the expense of literally the entire empire. And he did a lot of bad, killed a lot of people, had a lot of affairs, ran around, basically doing whatever he wanted and basically declaring that he was, in fact, a god and demanded to be worshipped as such. And when we left, we mentioned that
His actions were draining the Roman treasury faster than he could replenish it through taxes and even through extortion. And as such, as a consequence, a conspiracy formed between the Praetorian Guard, the Senate, and the Equestrian Order. And in late January of the year 41 AD, Caligula, along with his wife and daughter, were stabbed to death by the officers of the Praetorian Guard led by Cassius Chaerea. Dio notes Caligula learned by actual experience that he was in fact not a god. Now, the Senate attempted to use the disastrous end of Caligula's reign as a pretext to reestablish the Roman Republic, but Claudius, the heir designate, took the throne after gaining the support of the Praetorian Guard. The Julio-Claudian dynasty would remain secure for another 17 years until Nero's suicide in 68 AD. Nero was another monster entirely, but Caligula nonetheless leaves behind a number of stories associated with him. Now, the plot involved these three groups and ultimately led to the death of Caligula has been described as being planned by three men, but many in the Senate, army, and equestrian order were said to have been informed of it and involved in it. Nonetheless, the situation leading up to his death really puts things into perspective for us. Caligula became so infatuated with his own mystique, his own legend that he thought he was growing, that he didn't see the writing on the wall. He didn't see what was going on around him. He believed he was untouchable. He believed as emperor of the known world, he could do whatever he wanted, whenever the hell he wanted to, with no consequences whatsoever. Now, the situation had escalated when in the year 40 AD, Caligula announced to the Senate that he planned to leave Rome permanently and to move to Alexandria in Egypt, where he hoped to be worshipped as a living god. The prospect of Rome losing its emperor and thus its political power was the final straw for many people within the empire. Such a move would have left both the Senate and the Praetorian Guard powerless to stop Caligula's repression and debauchery. With this in mind, Cassius Chaerea convinced rioters to put their plot into action quickly. Now, according to Josephus, Chaerea had political motivations for the assassination. Suetonius, the biographer of Caligula, sees the motive in Caligula calling Chaerea derogatory names. So he says that the reason why he did this was likely because Caligula picked on him. But Caligula had been noted to have said that Chaerea was effeminate because of a weak voice and for not being firm with tax collection. He would mock him with names like Priapus and Venus. On the 22nd of January in the year 41 AD, although the biographer Suetonius gives us the date as 24th of January, Cassius, other guardsmen accosted Caligula as he addressed an acting troupe of young men during a series of games and dramatics held for the divine Augustus. Details recorded on the events vary somewhat from source to source, but they agree that at this moment, Cassius Chaerea stabbed Caligula first, followed by a number of other conspirators. Suetonius records that Caligula's death resembled that of Julius Caesar. He states that both the elder Gaius Julius Caesar and the younger Gaius Julius Caesar were stabbed 30 times by conspirators led by a man named Cassius Longinus and Cassius Chaerea. By the time Caligula's loyal Germanic guard responded, the emperor was already dead. The Germanic guard, stricken with grief and rage, responded with a rampaging attack on the assassins, conspirators, innocent senators, and bystanders alike. The Crypto Porticus, underground corridor beneath the imperial palaces on the Palatine Hill where this event took place, was discovered by archaeologists in 2008. Fun little fact for you guys. I mentioned before that the Senate attempted to use his death as an opportunity to restore the Republic.
Kariya tried to persuade the military to support the Senate, but the military remained loyal to the idea of an imperial monarchy, and as well they benefited greatly from it. The grieving Roman people assembled and demanded that Caligula's murderers be brought to justice, and uncomfortable with lingering imperial support, the assassins sought out and stabbed Caligula's wife, Caesonia, and killed their young daughter, Julia Drusilla, by smashing her head against a wall. They were unable to reach Caligula's uncle Claudius after a soldier Gratus found Claudius hiding behind a palace curtain. He was spirited out of the city by a sympathetic faction of the Praetorian Guard to the nearby Praetorian camp. Claudius later became emperor after procuring the support of the guard and of Sharia, as well as any other known conspirators involved in the death of Caligula. According to the biographer Suetonius, Caligula's body was placed under turf until it was burned and entombed by his sisters, and he would be buried within the mausoleum of Augustus in the year 410. During the sack of Rome, ashes in the tomb, however, were scattered. Now, the history of Caligula's reign, again, as we can see, remains to this day to be very problematic. As only two sources contemporary with Caligula have survived, and that's the works of Philo and Seneca. Philo's works on the embassy to Gaius and Flaccus give some details on his early reign, but mostly focus on events surrounding certain populations. Seneca's give mostly scattered anecdotes on his personality, but at one time, as well as the fact that Seneca, though, was also almost put to death by Caligula in the year 39 A.D., thus kind of calling into question some of his testimony. We're not sure what Seneca at the time was doing. But nonetheless, there had been once detailed contemporaneous histories on Caligula, but they are now lost. Additionally, the historians who wrote them are described as biased, either overly critical of Caligula or overt in praising him. Nonetheless, these lost primary sources, along with the works of Seneca and Philo, were the basis of surviving secondary and tertiary histories on Caligula written by the next generations of historians. A few of the contemporaneous historians are known by name. Among them are Fabius Rusticus and Cluvius Rufus, who both wrote condemning histories on Caligula that are now lost. Interestingly, Fabius was once friend of Seneca, who was known for his historical embellishment and misrepresentation. Cluvius was a senator involved in the assassination of Caligula, so his account might be closer, but also might not quite be a very good one either. Caligula's sister, Agrippina the Younger, wrote an autobiography that certainly included a detailed explanation of his reign, but it too is lost. She was banished by Caligula for her connection to Marcus Lepidus, who conspired against him. The inheritance of Nero, Agrippina's son and the future emperor, was seized by Caligula. Gallicus, a poet, produced a number of flattering writings about him, but they too are lost. The bulk of what is known of Caligula comes from the biographers Suetonius and Cassius Dio. Suetonius wrote his history on Caligula 80 years after his death, while Cassius Dio wrote his history over 180 years after Caligula's death. Dio's work is invaluable because it alone gives a loose chronology of Caligula's reign. A handful of other sources add a limited perspective on Caligula. Josephus gives a detailed description of Caligula's assassination, and Tacitus provides some information on his life under Tiberius in a now lost portion of his annals. Tacitus gives a detailed history of Caligula. Pliny the Elder's Natural History has a few brief references to him, but there are a few surviving sources on him, and no surviving source paints Caligula, though important to note, in a favorable light. The paucity of sources has resulted in significant gaps in modern knowledge of his reign, and little is written on the first 2 years of his reign. Additionally, there are only limited details on later significant events, such as the annexation of Mauritania, Caligula's military actions in Britannia, and his feud with the Roman Senate. Today, historians still debate whether or not Caligula was a madman or whether or not he suffered from some sort of illness. We're still not sure to this day. Historians, though, tend to lean towards the idea that Caligula might have actually had a physical ailment. For one thing, many people believe that it would have been unlikely for him to have been able to stay in power if he was for as long as he did, if he was really that crazy. But you can never underestimate what people can do once they get in power. But assuming the much maligned emperor was actually as crazy as the chronicles we know of describe him, some scholars have suggested that an illness may have made him become unhinged, possibly temporal lobe epilepsy, hypothyroidism, or Wilson's disease, which is an inherited disorder that can cause mental instability. It's also entirely possible that he had been poisoned at some point in time, and that poison had adverse effects on his mind, his mental state. But nonetheless, Caligula remains one of the most controversial figures in human history. And again, he is the subject of a cult classic film made in 1979, the Italian-American erotic historical drama film focusing on the rise and fall of the Roman Emperor Caligula, starring Malcolm McDowell, Teresa Anne Savoy, Helen Mirren, Peter O'Toole, John Steiner, and John Gielgud. It is the only feature film produced by the men's magazine Penthouse, and its producer, Bob Guccione, the magazine's founder, intended to produce an explicit pornographic film with a feature film narrative and high production values. He also cast Penthouse pets as extras in unsimulated sex scenes filmed during the post-production by himself and Giancarlo Luis. The film itself is considered to be a cult classic, though it is heavily critiqued by critics across the world. The performance of Malcolm McDowell, though, is still praised even amongst the critics. The film itself is considered to be so explicit that it is in fact banned in several countries in its full form. There are a number of countries in which it is not allowed. You cannot watch this film. You cannot get a copy of this film. The film itself is banned in you can see that it is in fact banned in Canada and Iceland, most notably. But it is the first major motion picture that juxtaposed segments featuring respected mainstream actors with scenes that were essentially pornographic. It shocked the world with its explicit portrayal of the emperor's cruel and salacious escapades, and really, really is a film that can truly, truly take your breath away. But nonetheless, guys, that is all I've got for you today. We've covered a lot of material. I've bombarded you all with a lot of information. So I'm only going to give you guys a few more things to look at, and then I'm going to let you all go free. So I'm going to recommend a few sources for you to take a look at. I like to make sure that everybody goes and checks things out. You're going to want to take a look at The Lives of the 12 Caesars by Suetonius. It has been translated, so you can get copies of it. So that's probably not a bad idea. You can take a look at the works of Seneca the Younger on firmness, Philo of Alexandria on the embassy to Gaius. All of these have been translated, so they're all able to be read and acquired. You can also look at the work of David Woods, Caligula, Incitatus, and the Consulship. You can look at the work of John G. Younger, Sex in the Ancient World from A to Z. And last but not least, you can look at the work of Cassius Dio, Roman History. So, hope you guys enjoyed the show today. This has been the presentation of Caligula, guys. That is what we got going on around here. Now, for those of you not apprised of the schedule, we do in fact have another episode this week, and that episode is coming to you Friday. And Friday, I have a real treat for you guys. That's right. It gets better. It always gets better with me. Here with me at the Bareback Facts, it gets better every time. We only get better with age. That's the thing. So Friday's episode is going to be particularly exciting because Friday we are going to talk about the Grand Inquisitor, Tomas de Torquemada, a man known for his cruelty, for his ingenuity, and for his part as the Grand Inquisitor of the Spanish Inquisition. So, guys, I hope you've enjoyed today's show on Caligula, and I hope you'll join me Friday at 5 p.m. when we talk about Tomas de Torquemada and the terrifying instruments of torture that he not only innovated but implemented during the Spanish Inquisition. So, guys, that's been today's show. See you all on Friday. Enjoy the rest of your week. And, of course, not only can you catch me Friday, but you can catch me Sunday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Time for Straight Football Talk. So if you don't get enough of me in the history show, you can get me at football time. Guys, enjoy the rest of your week. See you all on Friday.